Okay, so we have come to the next part of the mindfulness for young adult session. That is,
this sutta is called Parabhava Sutta, available in the Sutta Nipata. So as you know, there are very interesting and very powerful suttas are available in Sutta Nipata. And here again, Parabhava Sutta discuss about various causes, various reasons for downfall. Actually, the person who is asking this is a deva, a celestial being. He one day approached the Buddha during the night while Buddha was staying at the Savatthi in Jetavanarama, which was offered by Anathapindika. So Buddha was dwelling there, and at that time one celestial being approached the Buddha and he asked the question, Parabhavantang Purisang Mayang Puchchama Gotama Bhagavantang Puttu Magamma Kim Parabhavato Mukhang. We ask Gotama a question about person in a downfall. How to recognize a person in a downfall? We have come to ask the Blessed One, what is the cause of a downfall? In a way, very interesting and very practical, because many people think that sometimes they are in a downfall, and sometimes people think that they are always progressing, always in the rising edge, and they are doing well, and they have different perceptions about their conduct. Either they are doing well or either they are not doing well. So this is something related to each and every person. And this deva coming and ask the question, how we can recognize the person who is really going into the downside, who is going through in the downfall, how one can recognize. And here Buddha gives various reasons and various definitions how we can recognize a person in the downfall. Now, these reasons actually might differ from our own today's economical terms, because nowadays people are looking at things differently, but Buddha actually looked at it more into the spiritual side and more with respect to the karma. And so he takes the whole picture, a big picture, rather than simply considering this life. So one can consider only this life and even sell weapons and earn a lot of money. So that is basically seeing only this life. But in the long run, how much repercussions are there? How many going to suffer because of that? Because of that, and how much kind of unwholesome karma that this particular person generates? So we don't think like that, and we can't even see that. So therefore, Buddha, when he is giving an answer, he look at this whole picture, big picture, and as a result of that, he gives a very interesting answer. Now, when Buddha was asked this question, then he mentioned, Suvijano bhavang hoti, suvijano parabhavo. Dhamma kamo bhavang hoti, dhamma desi parabhavo. So it is not that difficult to understand the person who is in the downfall. And again, it is not difficult to recognize the person on the other side, that is in the progress side. It's not that difficult. Dhamma kamo bhavang hoti, the person who really loves dhamma and he really want to be in dhamma, practice dhamma. According to Buddha, so he is in the proper side, he is in the successful side. And on the other hand, if one is hating dhamma, detests dhamma, so he is on to the downfall. Sometimes people are engaged with that kind of detesting, that sort of condemning, and sometimes rejecting certain very interesting teachings of the Buddha or any other teacher without knowing the big picture. So sometimes when we consider the karma, even though certain people are doing bad, so sometimes they reap some good results. Then we get amazed, we get surprised. While these people are engaged with various unwholesome activities, how come their present life reaping some good results? When are they going to have the bad results or bad consequences of those unwholesome deeds? So we might even question. And on the other hand, when someone who is a good person going to reap some unwholesome karma, which we are not aware of, and we might even question that he is a good person, he observes sil, he observes precepts, he may even practice generosity, he may practice bhavana, meditation, but still he faced with all these different calamities, all these different difficult situations. Why it has happened? So you might even question, because we don't know the big picture, we only see a very limited picture, maybe only several decades of his life. We don't know what he has done in the past. Likewise, we don't know much about the full picture. As a result of that, for us, it is very difficult to understand the reality, the proper causes and conditions. But on the other hand, when Buddha gives an answer, he gives a very general answer on this kind of situation. And in general, therefore, he mentioned the one who loves Dhamma, one who accords with Dhamma, one who likes to live according to the Dhamma, is one who is thriving, developing. On the other hand, one who hates Dhamma, who rejects Dhamma, and detests Dhamma, is in the downfall. Here actually Dhamma means the good practice, we can say, the correct practice, and indeed we can say the Noble Eightfold Path, Sila Samadhi Panya. So these are, we can say, as the practice oriented. So this is the Dhamma referred here. And then Buddha, after mentioning that, so this particular celestial being, now he is happy about that answer, but he want to know more. Itihetang vijanama patamoso parabhav. Now I know what is the first case of a downfall. So the first case is that a person who hates, detests Dhamma, he is going to downfall. As I mentioned, we can't see it yet, probably. Currently he is hating, currently he is detesting, condemning, but probably still he haven't showing the downfall, but in the long run it may definitely happen. So that's why Buddha refers here, who hates, detests Dhamma going to downfall. And that is the first cause or case that Buddha refers here. Now this celestial being, he refers, okay, I know that now. Itihetang ujanava. Thus we understand this, that is the first case of downfall. Dutiyang bhagava bruhi kim parabhavato mukam. Now please let me know the second one. Please tell me the second one. Now after mentioning that, now Buddha explained the second one. Asantasya piyahonti santang sante na kurute piyang. Asatang dhammang rocheti tang parabhavato mukam. Now the bad are dear to him. So the wrong people, bad people, asappurisa are dear to him. He does not treat the good as dear. Now he doesn't treat good people as the dear ones. He approves of the teaching of the bad. That is the cause of downfall. Now sometimes this may be very practical. Say there are certain people that you want to put it to Dhamma. Maybe your friends, maybe your even children, maybe your parents. But sometimes very difficult. And you are giving enough reasons why they want to practice, why they need to practice. But they have various other options. They have many other priorities. And they even condemn, they even blame you, condemn you, and they don't want to be with you even. They don't want to associate with you. They want to associate someone else who is not into practice, who is simply going ahead with the mundane things, trivial things, which we understand those are trivial things, those are not necessary things, or those are unwholesome things that we know. But for that person, so those are the ones most important things. Say for example, if a person is an addict, drug addict, probably you might have tried him to overcome from that situation. But probably he is continuing that and associating those bad people, and he is continuously in the downfall. And there are certain other people who are in wrong beliefs. And you want to take them to the correct side, and you are trying to convince them, you are trying to preach them, or you are trying to show the path, you are giving enough instructions to them. But they are not interested. They don't want even to associate with you. They're simply trying to get rid of you. But they want to follow something else. and they think that particular teaching is the correct thing, and those who are following that teaching are the good people, the correct people. So they simply go with them, and so that kind of things are there. It's very difficult to convince people, and especially there are certain people, they always go with the bad people. So those bad people come together, they are preparing their own kind of goals, and that is what they are continuing. They never want to listen to Dhamma or practice Dhamma or be with the good people, and actually they may even sort of condemn the good people, the Dhamma, and that is the way that they are doing. Then Buddha mentioned those people are in the downfall. Presently, probably we can't see the repercussions yet, but maybe in the long run, probably even in your next life, so they may reap the results. So that's why when we consider the karma, it's very difficult to immediately understand the full scope. That's why I mentioned certain people are doing bad, but still they are reaping some good karma which they have done long time ago. Still the present bad karma haven't got the opportunity to sort of give their results. So it's very difficult, therefore, to immediately assess the person's situation, because we don't have the full spectrum of understanding about their full capacity, about their full lifespan. We may only know only several years of their achievements, of their conduct, but we don't know what they have done in the past and what kind of merit power they have. So we don't know. Now, these suttas, this particular sutta actually slowly bringing us to different levels, starting with the what we call as the kammasakata sammaditti. Probably you have heard that the sammaditti has two sides. We have to start with the kammasakata sammaditti. So, properly establishing ourselves in the wholesome side, abandoning the bad and being with the good, conducting the correct things, and being a good person. So that is, you can say, okay, the kammasakata sammaditti. So you basically believe in karma. If you do good, you may result the good results. You may encounter the good results. If you do bad, then you may have to go through the bad results. So this simple understanding about the karma is something that we have to base upon, and that we sometimes call as the kammasakata sammaditti. That's why, I mean, we are giving, we are, say, being generous, and we are doing the good things, we are not doing the bad things, we are trying to be moral, not immoral. So likewise, those more morality side, the sila side, and doing the wholesome deeds, avoiding unwholesome deeds, are part of the practice. And after Buddha mentioned that, then actually this celestial being now asked the next question. Itihetang vijanama dutiyoso parabhavo tatiyang bhagava bruhi kim parabhava to mukha. So he say, now I understood the second case of downfall. Tell us the third, blessed one. What is the cause of a downfall? Now he is asking the next one. Niddhasili sabhasili anuttata cha yo naro alaso koda panyano tam parabhavato mukam. So now Buddha mentioned niddhasili sabhasili anuttata cha yo naro alaso koda panyano tam parabhavato mukam. Now there are several causes, conditions are included here. Niddhasili. So, and some other times Buddha mentioned Nidda Ramata. So, certain people are fond of having sleep. So, they spend many, many hours in sleeping. They can't wake up early. Probably they go to bed early, but spend many hours in bed. And even after getting up, again they switch off the alarm and again sleeping. So, likewise, they are fond of sleeping and Nidda Sili. The person who is lethargic actually, and alas, sabhasili. Sabhasili is who is most like to be socialized, and always want to have the company of many people, many friends, and always on the stage, always with others, never like the seclusion. And they want to have many people around them. Sabasi. Anuttata cha yonaro. Who doesn't have any effort. Who doesn't want to exert any effort. So that is something we might have observed. Now certain people we are trying to encourage. I mean, we are giving enough reasons. Why they want to practice. Why they want to do this. Why they don't want to do that. Say, it doesn't only in the Dhamma side. Say, probably... Say you want to convince your children or someone else in the education, say, for example. Not much interested. So they are not having enough energy to start it. So likewise, there are situations that we are advising, we are trying to convince, but certain people don't have enough energy to start. And even if they start, they don't have energy to continue. So likewise, situations are there. People are less effortful. And on the other side, they are with a kind of lethargic atmosphere. They are with lethargic mental set. They don't have any exertion of effort. Also, they are lazy. Kodapanya. Now, they displace anger. Probably you are trying to talk, but they hate you. They are asking you to go away. So, those are possible. Certain people, they are quite angry, they want to even take revenge. They feel that they are not ready to accept any advice. It's very difficult to tame them, they're very difficult to talk to them, to address them. So these kind of different characters are there. And then Buddha mentioned, so those type of people are in the downfall. Because Sappurisa can't approach them. So there may be good people, but they can't approach these people because they are hateful. And they even find fault with the persons who are trying to help them, who are trying to guide them, instead of getting the advice, instead of correcting themselves, what they do is even hating the person who is trying to admonish. And even they take the revenge. Say a teacher is there, maybe a young person is there, young monk is there. Say, assume the teacher is trying to help, trying to guide. But the young person may probably don't like it. He even hate that person. So that is where Buddha mentioned. So they are in the opposite side. They are in the downfall. Itihetaṁ vijānāma tatiyoso parābhavu. Chatuttaṁ Bhagava Bruhi Kim Parabhavato Mukha. Now after hearing this examples, this cases, now this particular celestial being, so he is now inviting the Buddha to tell the other one. Next one.
Yo Matarangwa Pitarangwa Jinnakam Gata Yobbanam Pahu Santo Na Bharati Tang para bhavato mukha.
So then Buddha mentioned, so there is one person who is now capable and he is in a good position now. But he is not taking care of his, say, old mother and father who may be not in the good position now. So this is also a cause of downfall, because sometimes so we have the opportunity to look after our parents, to help our parents, and probably we are in a good, well-to-do position. And if we neglect them, and if we simply neglect our duties, and that is also something which probably may cause to regret. Because sometimes they encounter a lot of difficulties, and later we regret that when the opportunity is available, I didn't do that. So we later even regret. And probably those mother and father probably think how much dedication that they have spent during their time. When we were young, when we can't do much. So they have spent fair amount of time, their fair amount of their effort, they have dedicated their whole life on behalf of us. So when we
are well to do, when we are in a good position, if we neglect them, so that is not being grateful. So gratefulness is another aspect of mindfulness. Sometimes we talk. So as we become more and more mindful, so another good point of mindfulness is to be grateful. So you feel gratitude. Now when you are paying respect to the Buddha, we may feel certain gratitude towards the Buddha as a teacher. So he is the one who explained the Dhamma, who taught us the Dhamma, who has shown the path that we also can follow. So we may have a certain immense amount of gratitude towards the Buddha. So that may represent in the saddha, the faith we have towards him. And when we are offering a flower, so if we show that gratitude, if we feel that gratitude, so it's a very beautiful way of connecting with the Buddha. Those qualities actually sort of soften our heart, soften our mind. Because if we are in a kind of a rude, very tough or very stiff kind of mindset, then it's very difficult to develop the spiritual qualities. But on the other hand, if we are in a more soft, flexible, understandable, grateful kind of mindset, then those spiritual qualities which are into that side is quite easy to develop. Therefore, gratefulness, showing gratitude, is something that Buddha recommended. But anyway, Buddha also mentioned the grateful people are very rare. So katanyu katavedita is the term referred here, where Buddha mentioned being grateful, and you remember what another person, how he has helped, and you also have a lot of gratefulness or gratitude towards him, and you remember that you also come forward to help him in case he need it. But anyway, this particular quality Buddha mentioned is very rare in the world. So probably we associate particular person, we get the benefit, and later we forget him. We don't even care about him. But when we were in a bad situation, we were in the trouble, he's the one probably have helped. But later when we are well, we ignore them. We forget them. So that is typically available in the world. But another person, when he is in a need, assume that someone else has helped, but this particular person probably remember that till his death. Like say something written on a stone. So he remembers, he has that great gratitude towards that particular person who has helped. So that is a one significant good quality a sapurusa is showing. So one important criteria Buddha mentioned how to recognize a sapurusa, a good person, is that gratefulness. A sapurusa is always grateful. A good person is always grateful. He is not kind of an opportunist. Rather, he is a grateful person. So he remembers whatever the help another person has done. And when it is necessary, he is ready to help. So this gratitude, so this gratefulness is available, and it is recommended, and that is part of the, we can say, of the spiritual practice. So when one become more and more spiritual, so he become more sensitive, and gratefulness, gratitude becomes one part of his practice. So he being grateful to the situations, the people who has shown the path, motivated them into the path, or help to overcome certain difficulties. So, but on the other hand, if one ignores it, then Buddha mentioned he is in the downfall. After mentioning this, so again this celestial being was happy. Ittihetang janama chatutto so parabhaho panchamam bhagava bruhi kim parabhaho tomuka. Now I know the fourth one. Please tell me the fifth one. Yo brahmanang va samanang va anyang vapi vanibbakam musavadena vancheti tam parabhavato mukam. Now Buddha mentioned, if a particular person deceives by false speech, by lying, maybe who is coming to take something from you, maybe a beggar, maybe a samana, maybe a monk, whoever, when they are coming in search of you for some help, if you are lying, if you are simply ignoring them, and lying, and then Buddha mentioned, you are in the downfall. So if we really don't have, and if we are also in a difficult situation, of course we can tell, okay, I'm also in a, not in a good situation, please, maybe you can come at a later time when I am well to do. But currently I don't have much to do. I can't do much today. So if it is the result, proper situation, is the correct situation, yes, no problem, we can tell that. But on the other hand, while we have enough, if we are well to do, and if someone is coming and asking help, okay, as good human being, probably we can help. So if one is simply lying and ignoring, cheating, then Buddha mentioned he is in the downfall. So therefore, this particular sutta is more talking about the good qualities. And it is not only the meditation that Buddha recommend, but having good qualities is something that Buddha always recommended. So probably you might have heard about the Buddhaguna Alankare, one interesting Sinhala poetry. So there are someone has mentioned, so that I think Vidala Maitri Thero, so the author, so he mentioned, so when you are considering a good son, so this good son is always has guna nana belin yutu putumaya yutagaru. So basically the one who is with the good qualities as well as the wisdom is the one who we can really say is a good son. So likewise, when we are simply taking the Buddha's teaching only from the technical point of view, only from the intellectual point of view, we probably forget about the quality side. We forget about the faith. We forget about the saddha, the good qualities that we need to have. So these things seems to be have to be in parallel. So we have to have good qualities. We have to be a good person. At the same time, we have to develop wisdom, insight, practice. So both are going in parallel. Then we are going in the proper direction. Otherwise, kind of an imbalance can happen. So that is why certain amount of flexibility, certain amount of faith is a part of the practice. So faith and the wisdom has to be balanced. Faith is also faculty, saddha indriya. Wisdom is also another faculty, panya indriya. So the faith and panya, faith and wisdom has to be properly balanced. If we have only faith and no wisdom, that is also not good. If you only have wisdom, the intellectual side, and you don't have much faith, that is also not correct. So taking both parallelly, maybe, if possible, is something that we can look into. How to maintain a mind which is faithful, you have the softness, soft qualities, good qualities. At the same time, you are not simply being emotional and crying and always going and sort of being compassionate and fully dedicate yourself for the others. Rather, you take care of yourself as well. You do your practice and you are trying to develop yourself through the Vipassana practice so this good side also has another support coming from the wisdom. So therefore, these are certain things that we can look into, reflect upon with respect to practice. And with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Awesome. Today we have four questions.
Right.
First question is with reference to the mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing for some time with this forum and much merits for helping us to build the regular practice. For the last 2 years, there is definitely a progress in sitting and walking practice and some day-to-day activities. Now I have started getting more sensitive to emotions such as anger, frustration, lust, etc. I see them more often, how overwhelming they are, and getting frustrated. I hear you advise that they are just mere emotions and thoughts and not to feed them, which is not that simple in our lives. I tend to think that maybe it is too early for me to start looking at the mind, even though it happened naturally. Appreciate your guidance with metta. That is the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, you are very correct. Basically, when we start being mindful only, we recognize or we spot these different deficiencies we have, different shortcomings we have.
I have a lot of anger, I have a lot of lust, sometimes I feel jealousy, I have doubts. So all these certain defilements you notice only when you are being mindful. Otherwise what happens is we completely ignorantly following them. So other than ignorantly following them, knowing that we have these shortcomings is something good. So we have to start from there. True that we still can't overcome them. Still these different, say, unwholesome thoughts are appearing in our mind. Doesn't matter. But at least we know, okay, I have these shortcomings. Time to time, lustful thoughts are arising and I sometimes even follow them. Sometimes angry thoughts are arising and sometimes I really get angry and I'm, say, blaming another person, hitting another person. Still, I know, I mean, these are the problems I have to address. So this is where we start with. This is where we understand our shortcomings because we start practicing mindfulness. And one aspect of mindfulness is this actually. So Buddha mentioned, Ati dovariko bhikkhave arya savako savajjam pajahati anavajjam bhaveti. So mindfulness is very much like a gatekeeper. It will show us, okay, these are the good things, these are the bad things. Now later we start further development where we get the support from the samadhi, the concentration of the mind. We get the support of the vipassana, the wisdom side. So altogether, when we have the support coming from all these different other sides as well, then we can properly address whatever the, say, shortcomings within ourselves. So therefore, don't worry. So understanding that these shortcomings are available in my mind is something good. Yeah.
The second question out of four. This is a general question and this is related to the first one as well. Dear Bhante, regarding the previous question about getting frustrated when one sees own hindrances, fetters and influxes, is this part of what we have heard, Ashwada Adinava Nisara? Much appreciate if Bhante can explain the above phenomena with metta.
More than Asada Adinava Nisarana, actually we can say, I mean, in order to overcome defilement, first of all, we need to recognize them. First of all, we need to notice them. That is why Buddha reiterated in Sambhavasava Sutta, Janato bhikkave passato asavanam khayam vadama. No ajanato, no apassato. So if you want to overcome all the pains, then first of all, you need to notice them. First of all, you need to recognize them. Then only the possibility is available for you to overcome them. So otherwise, if we don't know them, if you never notice them, then we become simply the follower of those defilements. We become kind of slaves of those defilements. So that is the typical situation. Now, if you consider a person who is not mindful and who is ignorant about the Buddha's teaching, they simply follow their desires. They whenever they want something, they simply go after it and implement it, and they don't care whether it is useful or harmful to yourself, oneself or another person. They want somehow to implement it. They simply follow their desires. On the other hand, say they are angry, so they simply go and kill and maybe get into arguments because they don't control. They can't control. They become really emotional. And they immediately act upon those different emotions. But when one become mindful, start noticing them. So that is the beginning, we can say. Later, when we are continuing our practice, okay, we can recognize them when they are available in the mind, but now we can stop transgressing the precepts. Say you have hateful thoughts. You are noticing those hateful thoughts available in the mind, but you are not going to blame anyone. You are not getting into arguments. You are keeping those hateful thoughts within you, but internally burning. True. Later, further you are continuing your practice and you probably can notice those say emotions, whatever the defilements at their early stages, so that you can address them quickly. Yeah.
The third question out of five. This is mindful walking. Related to mindful walking. Dear Venerable Sir, my walking is not so relaxed and calm compared to the sitting mindfulness on breathing. I try to keep attention on the food, observation on the soul, and can continuously be mindful for 10 to 15 rounds. The mindfulness seems to be much thinly spread across awareness, and there are no indications of calm and relaxed status in the mind. My question is there any concentration quality within brackets or samadhi practice getting developed in our walking practice? At the moment, I use walking as a physical readiness for the sitting without thinking much about the different qualities of the mind. Much merits for your valuable service with metta. That is the end of the question.
Yeah. Actually, the concentration developed in walking meditation is more into the momentary concentration. So we can actually, if you like, you can divide concentration into two sides. The Kanika Samadhi, the momentary concentration, and again we can say kind of sustained concentration, where you are taking one particular phenomena and keeping your attention more in that phenomena for a longer time, very much like a tranquility practice. But in the Vipassana side, in the walking meditation, more is where again and again you are being concentrated with that particular phenomena presently arising. Say, for example, when your foot is touching the ground, so you recognize there is hardness, there is softness, or there is movement. So they are happening right now. So when they happen right now, your mind is concentrated there. That is very necessary for Vipassana practice. Unlike, suppose you do Samatha practice, where you take something as permanent. Say you are looking at a particular thing, say a particular color, a colorful disc, and you are looking at it again and again, and you consider it as beautiful, you consider it as permanent, and again you are attending your mind to that, applying your mind to that. And now your mind gets concentrated. Because you consider this object is fixed, permanent. So this is the Samatha practice. But in the Vipassana side, say, again and again, various phenomena are arising, and you are readily available to look at it. You are readily available to investigate it. So this is in the Vipassana practice. So that training you can get through the walking meditation, because constantly various phenomena are arising, they are constantly changing, and you are readily available to look at it. You have that capacity to quickly aim your mind onto a particular phenomena and look at it, quickly look at it. So therefore the concentration building up at what you call this walking meditation is more into the Kanika Samadhi, the momentary concentration, and that has a lot of value when we are coming to the Vipassana practice.
Fourth question out of five. This is relevant to the mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, I do sitting practice regularly for 45 minutes to 1 hour without having any difficulties. But the issue is, I could settle my body very quickly, just a normal thing for me now, but my mind is always going round and round. Immediately after, when I recognize it, I take it back to my body, but suddenly gone. After practice 1 hour, I feel very comfortable, energetic and relaxed. So I continue my practice. Appreciate your guidance or any technique for me to keep my mind within the body for at least 1 second without drifting with metta.
Yeah, I mean, it may happen slowly. I mean, you don't need to worry, because that is where we all start with. So our mind is very much like addicted to shift, addicted to get distracted. Now we are trying to correct it. We are trying to tame it. So as much as possible, I mean, sit comfortably, because when you are sitting, the posture has to be very comfortable. If it is more painful, if it is irritating, then it is very difficult to use it as a anchor for your wandering mind. But if once you are sitting, if you feel more comfortable, you feel lighter, feeling at ease, then when the mind comes back to your body, so it also feels comfortable. It is not irritating. It's not painful. So why we can, on the other way, we can argue why mind is drifting, why mind is getting distracted. Because internally we are not happy. Internally, we may be a little frustrated. So when the mind comes back home, the home environment is not good. So again, it is going out in search of happiness. But suppose when it is coming back home, coming back to the body, if body is ready to accept it, and it has very pleasant environment within the body, and you are maintaining that accepting attitude, you are ready to accept, you are welcoming the returning mind, and now it may stay longer within the body. And when it comes back, probably now use your mind to observe something. So because sometimes it is necessary to have some activity for the mind to occupy. So at the beginning of our practice, we purposely occupy our mind onto some wholesome object. So that is what we call as the primary object, the Mula Kamathana. The primary object is something that we are using so that mind again and again get involved with it, can investigate that, be with it, apply onto that again and again. So that is where, say, we are using the breath or rising and falling or various other sensations. So when the mind returns back to the body, okay, you slowly ask it to look at the breath. Now, again and again, in-breath happens, you are looking at it. Out-breath happens, you are looking at it. Again, in-breath happens, you are looking at it. Out-breath happens, you are looking at it. So there is a task assigned to the mind. And you can even, like you are educating a child, you can tell the mind, okay, if you wander, you might even miss several breaths. Because while you are being distracted, many, many breaths may happen. So you miss the opportunity to look at them. They are gone. Now you better stay within the body. You better stay with the breath and observe them as much as possible. Then probably after you are doing something good, probably you can praise the mind. Okay, you are today is good. You are quite mindful. You are fairly concentrated. You did it today really well. It's very much like we are educating a child. Sometimes we have to be a little strict. Sometimes we have to be soft. Sometimes we have to praise. Sometimes we have to blame. So likewise, we have to slowly take care of the mind. So these are kind of common problems we all come across during our meditation. So don't worry. So your practice alone will slowly help you to develop these skills. So with time, it will happen.
This is the fifth question, Dear Bhante,
yeah.
Can you please explain how we should establish mindfulness when in different body postures? It is very clear how we do sitting and walking and some of the day-to-day activities. When we have static posture, how can we establish mindfulness? With
can mental? You repeat the last one? When we have?
We have static postures.
Uh-huh.
How can we establish mindfulness?
I think the same. Say, for example, you are now standing still. Say you are in a queue. You have nothing much to do. You are simply standing. So at that time, what are you feeling? Say at your soles, probably there may be a fair amount of pressure being built up. And you you can check how the heartbeat happens. You can check how rising and falling happens. And how you can check how the knees are sort of a little aching if it is for a long time that you are standing. And assume that you are lying down. Then again, you can see how rising and falling happens, how breathing happens, and how you feel relaxed. So likewise, slowly. So many different postures you can look at mindfully. And you simply ask from the body. So you are trying to take your attention more into the body, and then you can simply aware what are the things available right now, what are the sensations available right now. So you are simply asking from your body. So different sensations are there. Assume that while you are lying down, so your head may be touching the pillow, so there is a sensation there. So you are keeping one hand on top of the other hand, there is a sensation there. And say your body is touching the mattress. Say there is a sensation there. So likewise, irrespective of the posture, there are many, many sensations available. And if our mind slowly concentrate within the body, then we start being aware of them. Right now, probably our mind gets distracted towards various outside objects. So that is why we are not much aware of the internal sensations available. But when we are able to establish mindfulness within the body, there are enough sensations always available within the body.
Okay, that was the last question, Bhante. And right. Now we will be able to move to guided sitting session. And I would like to invite you to guide us, short guidance for guided sitting practice.